Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that very revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that very revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for December 26, 2010, day after Christmas. Lucky we have that, so we're able not to have to broadcast on the holiday. But from Summerville, Georgia, my co-host, Tim Shiflett. Welcome, Tim.
Oh, good evening, sir.
Yeah, good to have you. And Catherine's going to be in and out with us from the Detroit airport. So we've never had a live Detroit airport call, so got to get excited about that. But then also our special guest here in about 7:10 is going to be Miss Gina Brown, running for State House in the special election out of Jessup, Georgia. And so we'll talk about that race and Gina's work and different things. There's five candidates in that race, and she's the only Democrat, so that can't hurt, given that the Republicans are splitting their support five ways. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and that may get her into a runoff or something there.
Yeah, well, we'll find out more about that a little later. And since we're kind of, you know, kind of the theme of the show is going to be special elections, or some of those, what we'll talk about census numbers and different things, but in Arkansas, they have another special election. I think we talked about this on a few weeks ago, Tim, where Keith Crass ran for office as a Republican, died before the election, and then was unable to serve. Now, they had an incumbent Democrat that was term limited. Trying to find the name on this, but I don't see it. But he said, well, I'm term limited, I won't run. So, therefore, they had to have a special election. Each party got to choose a candidate. And Garland County is the center of this district. And the Garland County Democrats chose an attorney, Jerry Rapon, to run for them. And I guess there's been some kind of infighting about which different candidates will be in this. This is a Hot Springs House race, if you will. What have you heard about this race?
Well, they seem to be excited out there about this gentleman. He is a pretty progressive fella, and they seem to think that he has a chance to either win or cut it close. Now, I'm not one of those that gets excited about, you know, quote, cutting it close, because in politics, to me, moral victories are losses. I mean, so, you know, I'd like to actually have a chance to win this thing. Another thing I found interesting about this is that they, in party caucus, they meet, you know, the activists and choose their candidates for these special elections. They don't do what we do, you know, in a state like Georgia, where anybody wants to qualify, well, you jump in and you run. I would really prefer to see it that way, but, you know, it's a one-on-one race now, and I guess we'll just see what happens. I don't think it's going to be a harbinger of anything, though. I don't want nobody to read too much into this.
Yeah, Hot Springs, though, that's Bill Clinton's stomping ground, so you think he might even want to go back and see some of his buddies in Hot Springs and maybe
wouldn't it be lovely? You're running for a seat in the legislature, and you have Bill Clinton to come campaign for you.
Yeah, but sometimes guys that are way past this kind of stuff, they get sentimental when it's their home area. Plus, mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if they go see some family members or what have you, because, you know, he grew up in Hot Springs. But you were talking about different things about this, and one of the points you mentioned was the fact that it's going to be the parties pick their nominee. Now, well, I think it is good that everybody gets to run, and it's probably more little d Democratic, you know, just letting folks run all in one poll and then having a runoff if necessary, mm-hmm. even if you did instant runoff voting. that's probably more good government, if you will. But I will say this, as somebody that's into party politics like you are, be it Republican or Democrat, if you were able to, pick your candidates at this level, it's another reason for folks to pay their dues and be involved in the party and stay, you know, active, if you will. So I guess this may actually help places like Arkansas, where they do it this way, keep their, you know, membership roles and support a little more intense. What do you think, Tim?
I don't know. It kind of reeks of a smoky backroom deal kind of thing to me, where a fella just has to pack one of these meetings with his supporters and win right there. I really would love to see these guys in these special elections face the voters.
I really would.
You know what? If there's 8 or 10 candidates running in this special election, you're also probably going to bring more voters out to vote than you would if, say, there were 2, right?
You would think. And, of course, now this gets into when you don't have the instant runoff voting, that means you're having 2 elections, and that does cost, you know, extra money. So you could still have the pool of candidates run, have the instant runoff voting, and then do it that way. But this way, I guess, does get down to, you know, core politics of here's the Democrat, here's the Republican, choose what you want. I guess parties like the Libertarian and the Green and anything else you can come up with, I don't know if they get to pick their own people or they're out.
There's another thing, too. The fellow that this gentleman defeated for the nomination had apparently run for the state senate or something before. His politics were more conservative. And his argument was, you know, I'm the more electable of the 2 candidates. And so you have to wonder, in this type of meeting, well, did the people who voted select the more electable candidate, or did they select the one that they just liked better, or their supporters was there or something, and just outnumbered
the other fellows? I have no idea about the political leanings, moderate or liberal, of the Garland County Democrats, but I usually know that folks at these meetings, they like to pick people that will get elected. But I'll say this, like if this other fellow's, contention is, oh, he got his people out to the meeting and he got more organized and that's why he beat me. Well, that sounds like a pretty crappy argument about why you should have been the nominee for a job where the whole goal is to get people out to vote for you. So Jerry Rapan did that better.
This fella did say, hey, I've still got my organization in place from when I ran before. Well, I thought, well, gee, why wasn't your organization there at this meeting to get you this nomination? But, you know.
Yeah, they weren't really
like
excited about it, obviously. Yeah, they might not have been real organized if they couldn't actually get there. But I've actually reached out to Mr. Jerry Rapan and actually invited him to come on the show, and hopefully that'll happen sometime in the new year
so we can talk with him. Yeah.
Yeah, and one final point on this, you talked about moral victories and how you're not into those. And, Tim, I completely agree with you on, like, when a race where, let's say, you know, it's been held by a Democrat or it's been, you know, and you're in the Democratic Party and you came close, there's no moral victory there. You lost. Now, I will say, like, some third party, like a Libertarians, if they got a greater percentage of the vote than they ever got, then that could be a moral victory. Or if it's a seat that's always been for years and years like an 80-20, you know, Republican to Democratic divide, and the Democratic candidate, you know, comes up and gets 60-40, you know, doubles the number out of nowhere, that could be a moral victory. Or the other way. I mean, obviously, if there's some, you know, heavily Democratic district, Republicans, you know, double their vote share and lose, that still could be a moral victory in that case. But in a seat where it's currently held by a Democrat, they lost it in the election to a dead guy, then just getting close isn't really a moral victory in this case. You got to bring it home.
A loss is a loss is a loss. 1998, Jim Williams came really close to Bob Barr, but he didn't beat him, and we still have a Republican congressman in this district. And look what happened in the presidential election of 2000. A lot of Democrats walked around saying, well, we got the most votes. Well, you know what? We weren't the person in the White House, and look what happened as a result. So, you know, they have consequences. A close loss is still a loss. Let's don't talk about cutting it close out there. Let's talk about winning the thing.
I know exactly what you mean. And in this case, you got to win it all the way to bring it home. Well, I guess since we're talking about special elections, we're going to switch from Arkansas to Georgia, and we're going to welcome on our guest, Ms. Gina Brown. Welcome, Gina.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yes, on with me and Tim Shiflett. And also, Catherine Smith may call in a little later. But, Gina, what I want to start with is just folks may not be familiar with your background. Tell us a little about your biography.
Oh, great. I grew up in the segregated South. I actually had to stop and think about it a minute because I didn't really realize that when the busing started in seventh grade that we were, you know, becoming integrated. And reflecting back on that, you know, I was just a good child. I was in the Girl Scouts, the library aide. I was office aide. I played violin in fifth grade because of a grant by a lady who left an inheritance to the Jacksonville Symphony. And so I grew up in the area of Jacksonville, Florida schools, and graduated down there pretty high in the class. And, you know, I had a partial scholarship to go to school, and Mama had me a interview for Hee Haw, which was an old country show back in the day. But, you know, I ended up, as my daddy would say, I was in the blackberry bushes and caught my husband and had a couple of children, and it took me a little bit to get back to school. And, you know, to get around where I'm at today, I married a man from Waycross and actually was introduced to Georgia back when my baby was about two. We used to come up for the bluegrass shows at the Twin Hill Parks there in Brantley County in Schlatterville, and Mama and them, well, my stepdaddy, he worked at Plant Hatch, and so they had bought a place on the lake, and they were working in Ville, and that was my introduction to Georgia, was digging sweet potatoes and picking blueberries. But those were good days back in the day. And when I married my husband from Waycross, we moved up here to Brantley County. I lived over there about 6 years, and when I moved to Wayne County, that's when I became more politically active, in 08, yeah.
Yes. Well, now, I understand that you started something. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's one of my children saying goodbye. She just got back from Florida for Christmas with her mama all down there, and she just really couldn't thank her mama's on it. Radio show.
Yes, well, I don't worry about background. We've had dogs barking, family members, and squeaky screen doors and everything else in the background on the Kudzu Vine. But, yeah, I know in recent years you started something called Team Rural. Tell us about that.
Team Rural, I started Team Rural because I actually am just a volunteer answered person, and I volunteered for just Earth Day cleanup, River Day cleanup, just anything that was going on. And I can recall when Barack Obama was running in 08, and you know, everything was being said about that minister situation, and I actually tuned in to watch him throw that pastor under the bus, but he didn't do it. You know, he actually gave a very good speech on race, a more perfect union. And it, you know, prompted my heart and my mind to reflect inwardly about what have I given back to my community. And Team Rural is what they put on my name tag. I volunteered for the Barack Obama campaign after I researched him and found out that he was not a Muslim and that there was a lot of things being said about this man that was incorrect. And I really felt like he was bringing a change for the country, that we could start a healing process and bring about the needed change in the South, because my personal issue, I'll just be up front, is prejudice and justice, injustice. And, you know, that's what prompted my heart to motion. And So when I got this email from the Obama campaign, you know, that I could volunteer for 30 hours a week for 6 weeks for a fellowship, I thought, well, I hope they don't know that I'm 49 years old, because they were sending it out to college kids. Well, I was accepted, and when I went in, I was from so far down south here, away from Atlanta. They put me on Team Rural, and that was actually the name they put on my name tag. And I can recall when I went down in that huge auditorium at Spelman College, I said, young man, where does Team Rural fit? Because there were 36 teams. And he just looked at me and he said, you know, you can sit anywhere you'd like. And so I sat right down front for 3 days because I didn't want to get left out. But became an organizer, got hired. I went out to Arkansas for health care, working out there with Change That Works, and lobbying Senator Blanche Lincoln for 3 months last year. And when I came back, I noticed that the county that I had organized the 8 campaign had kind of fell away from their volunteer activism. They had went their separate ways. They weren't communicating any longer. So when Organizing for America asked us to hold one-year anniversary gather, of course, we were just really glad and excited to do that for his inauguration, the one-year anniversary. And so that was the night that I suggested Team Rural to everyone. You know, why don't we come back together as a team, and why don't we cross county lines and help each other win small elections, city council, county commission, mayor races. Because the thing is, they lost their direction and where they, you know, wanted to go. And we had such a great thing going in 08 when we were crossing county lines and supporting one another. We found, you know, that there were more of us out here in rural Georgia than people want to give credit to. And I think that as we joined hands and joined arms and shoulder to shoulder went forward with voter registration drives and other things, being publicly active, we became more empowered to, take ownership of our community in civic-minded ways and also in activism ways and then also in volunteering to keep Georgia Beautiful projects and things like that. So Team Rural is a group of individuals from 10 southeastern Georgia counties and some folks that we're just like-minded. We just want to keep moving forward and let folks know that rural people are not as slow-witted as some people would make us out to be.
Oh, we know that's not true. Well, Gina, one last question on just about in general before I pass it over to Tim, and then Catherine Smith just joined us. Is the special election, it's going to be held February 15th. Hopefully people won't have Valentine's Day hangover. 5 candidates. What prompted you to get in this race?
Oh my goodness, David, I did not want to get into this race. I just came out of the governor's race working down there in Florida, and actually was able to go to Washington on a scholarship with the New Organizing Institute to debrief and talk about best practices and things that went wrong or went well in the midterm. And I got the call up there, you know, that they really needed someone to run. And we had already talked to a few elected officials. And I think it is kind of a hardship on these county commissioners or city councilmen if they have to sign away their seat to run. It's kind of a silly law. I think it kind of keeps people in their place. And it wasn't something I wanted to do. There was actually a man that was considering running. But, you know, when you look at the numbers and then you realize that, hey, it's just a field game, I'm, you know, just the horse you need to bet on. I'm like Seabiscuit. I've got the heart. Don't count me out. It's all about a ground game, especially with no primary. And, you know, at some point when you're letting go and let God, I actually had to say, okay, this is not what I see myself doing, but if this is what I need to be doing to help my folks and to help folks on the ground, then I will be a service to my community. And this is how I felt like I could do it, by stepping up to the plate.
Yes. Well, I'm going to pass this thing around to my two co-hosts. Tim, questions for Gina Brown on the selection.
Yes, ma'am. For the benefit of our listeners, could you tell us a little bit about House District 178, exactly where it is and what kind of performing district it is, you know, for Democrats and Republicans, things like that?
Oh, my goodness. I just have to tell you that we are in the reddest, some of the reddest counties in Georgia. You know, the presidential campaign office in 08 was here in Jessup for 10 southeastern counties along the board and down to the Florida line, and you wouldn't know it. There was such a, I call it the fear vote. I mean, they just turned out in record numbers, and, of course, I'm in a really, 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 really red county. Pierce and Brantley, 90% white population with 10% minority. Wayne's got about 80% white with a 20% minority. But, you know, what I see happening on the ground is it's not about race or color. It's about integrity and, you know, bringing back to the community what we really need. Rural folks are pragmatists. You know, we're not really seeing the change that we're seeking. I mean, we want to be the change that we seek because our jobs are the ones that are going overseas. You know, we lost a mill a couple of years ago, well, I've got a cold. Y'all don't mind me. But this is mainly timber industry in there. So, you know, it's slim pickings. It's slim pickings down here for a Democrat. But I think with a Democrat such as myself, I'm not afraid to go where no man has gone before.
One more question about this election, then I'll pass it over to Catherine. With five candidates in the race, are we looking at a pretty good possibility that there is going to be a runoff?
I would say absolutely not. With a good organizer such as myself, are you kidding? I am not going to work myself off for a runoff. No, sir. I
okay.
Intend to work hard
okay.
for this election.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Catherine?
Hey, greetings from Detroit Metro Airport. I apologize for all the background noise. I've been trying to keep it on mute, but there's like bells ringing and all that, so sirens going off. And I wanted to ask you mentioned that it was all about a field game, and I, you know, am very much in agreement about that. So what are you doing to get the vote out, and what are your what are the voters telling you? I mean, obviously jobs, the economy, but what other issues are coming up for your future constituents?
I can promise you that the ground game in Georgia has been no different than the ground game in Arkansas where I was working or Florida just this past midterm. It's about jobs. It's about education. I believe as a woman and a mother that we are very, very saddened and very tired of the educational cuts. And also there is no job creation. I mean, come on, in the third quarter they had the largest productivity increase in history. But you didn't hear them bragging about all this money they made with corporations, the largest, you know, in history. And so it is about easing suffering on the ground, easing suffering. You know, I don't know how to do that by myself, and I can only tell you that with the sincere relationships I've built throughout the years down here in Southeast Georgia, I wouldn't be anywhere. I wouldn't even be on this phone tonight. If it weren't for the good people of Pierce and Brantley counties and Wayne County that believe that ordinary rural working class people should have a voice in the legislation. And, you know, I'm just very grateful for those relationships that we've kept.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. David?
Yes. Well, Gina, if someone, you know, has heard you tonight, wants to get involved with your campaign, help you financially with, you know, sweat equity, if you will, how could they do that?
Well, that is so nice of you to ask because I actually noticed in today's paper in the Wayne County, they're looking for a Wayne County field representative, and I've never seen an ad like that in the job section of the paper. And they're paying commission salary and all expenses paid. And although, you know, we can't run a ground game like that, we certainly would accept a check or money order, to a committee to elect Gina Brown and mailed to care of 125 Sauna Street, Jessup, Georgia, 31546. That's Ernest Larson. He's my treasurer on the committee to elect. And, you know, you could go to my website at www.teamrural.com. And anyway, yeah, need help. I mean, honestly, I need help. If it weren't for the good people, again, of these three county area here, you know, I wouldn't have raised the money I've already raised. So we need help. We are ordinary working class folks on the ground. We want to be a voice for reason and compassion. You know, we're just tired of folks pushing and bossing folks around like they own rural Georgia. You know, for example, I was in a committee meeting, and it was just very despairing to me that someone said to me, let Sarah Palin have the rural. And, I mean, I just stopped dead in my tracks. I'm not even going to name the county I was in when I was in their committee talking. But I remember I looked back and I directions. She doesn't own anything in Georgia. It just shocks me that, you know, we can be so about Georgia and about our future together here. We have to work together. And to have a supermajority in the House, that's not American either. You know, so I just feel like I'm the best viable candidate and would hope that common sense Georgians would want to help my campaign. And I sure appreciate y'all having me on tonight.
Well, Gina, best of luck with your election, the campaign, and we'll be watching and following it and seeing how it progresses and should it progress and be a runoff for you and another candidate. May have to have you back and see how you got to that point.
All righty. I suspect you might be calling sooner than that.
Okay. Thanks again, Gina.
All right, sir. Thank you so much.
Yes. Well, Catherine, welcome. Didn't get a chance to do that to you earlier. Glad you made it on in from the Detroit airport. Catherine, I tell you, the day after Christmas, we're worried about not having topics. Luckily, we do, but if things get slow, we'll need your background just to maybe have something to discuss, whatever's going on at the Detroit airport.
Well, it's not very exciting, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm just glad you're not in the Philadelphia airport. You won't be going anywhere. But
Or the Atlanta airport.
From there. Yeah. So, let's kind of get ourselves reset. And a good way to do that is Tim Schiff, what we know periodically, has the outrage of the week. And, Tim, I think you've been outraged in the past week, so you want a little time, so we're going to give it to you right now.
Yeah, here lately I seem to be outraged about every week, David, but especially this week about something. Spearheaded by the Republican victories in the November election, the country undoubtedly lurched to the right as we came to the close of 2010. Led by the energy of the right-wing teabaggers, the GOP rode back into power, armed with many big promises. That's one of these promises I'd like to take issue with tonight, that of the promise to seriously cut spending and balance the budget. First of all, I know that Democrats are accused by Republicans and others of being, quote, big spending liberals. Now, that, of course, is a load of bull hockey because, first of all, if you looked at spending levels historically in modern times, you will all see that it is actually the Republicans who have been the biggest spenders. The national debt more than tripled during the administration of Ronald Reagan. It more than doubled under Bush 43. Even last year's budget deficit under Obama was $125 billion lower than that of the previous final budget under Bush. And the second thing about this big spending liberals is the Democrats are not, contrary to popular opinion, loaded with nothing but liberals. Has anybody out there ever heard of blue dogs? A lot of this bunch is more fiscally conservative than many of their GOP counterparts. We really do have a Big Ten in our party. All of the ideological purification is going on in the other party, where, frankly, liberals and moderates are not welcome anymore. So anyway, they want to cut spending in a big way, they say. And what's the first thing they do? Well, they cut a little deal with the president to extend the Bush tax cuts for at least 2 more years. And right to the national debt, they added the tidy sum of $858 billion. Now, I know that some of you out there will argue that this will prime the economy and the extra revenue will pay for this. Why? Why should I believe that? I heard that in 2001 and again in 2003 when these tax cuts started. And I heard all about how these cuts would make the economy strong for a generation and maybe for several generations to come. None of that was true. The debt exploded in a way never seen before, and the economy crumbled into almost a second Great Depression. And did you know about some of the goodies in this little tax deal? Did you know, for instance, that if you buy a racehorse, you could get a tax break? Hey, tell all your rich friends, okay? Did you know that if you're a television producer, you get a break too? I don't personally know any, but I'd tell them if I did. Did you know that, and you're going to love this one, that you also get a tax break if you build a windmill? Now, there's not much call for windmills up here in the mountains where I live, and I'm sure that Catherine doesn't see that many windmills in the metro area. Hey, I got it. Maybe, David, you could build one behind your house or something, right? And you could get yourself a tax break. Or if you want in on some of those really cool tax breaks, maybe you should think of going to Puerto Rico and make rum, because you'd get a tax break for that, too. And now, look, after all of that, if you feel left out, don't worry. There's about 50 different business tax breaks in this legislation. I'm sure we could find something perfect there for you. I mean, heck, if you own an insurance company and you have wanted to invest overseas, now's the time, because, folks, you will get a tax break. And you guys in the world of motorsports, you're going to get a generous break from the taxpayers to upgrade your facilities and tracks. See how it works? More profits for you, more money out of my pocket for nonsense. That's the modern definition, or government definition at least, of balance. So you Republicans want to cut spending, eh? Well, you start by blocking the omnibus bill because I'm shocked to report it contained the dreaded earmarks. Now, I won't even get into the fact that many of these earmarks were put there by Republicans. What I will get into is the fact that these earmarks cost about $12.8 billion. So, to appease the teabaggers, you cut $12.8 billion and stop the whole budget from passing, and at the same time, you add nearly $900 billion to the debt with this tax nonsense for the rich, and so you and the teabaggers can high-five each other or something. Sounds like more of that Republican fuzzy math to me. And before somebody brings up to me that President Obama was part of the deal, yes, I know that. I am ashamed that the president signed on to this thing. I am angry about it. Let there be no mistake. He should not have done it. That being said, well, what are you Republicans going to cut to balance the budget? You're running an annual deficit of nearly $1.3 trillion. The only places to get that kind of money are Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, or National Defense. You could cut out another 100 programs of your choosing, and it wouldn't begin to approach what you need. So you're left with one of these three programs. Go ahead and choose. Do you slash defense spending during wartime? do you slash programs for seniors and the poor? What do you do? I know what you'd like to do and what I think you'll try to do. Social spending will be the big loser here because you hate it and you always have. And as for the rest, well, it'll go away as an issue, and you won't want to talk about it anymore because, as you've proved in the past, you Republicans have no more idea how to balance the budget than the man in the moon. I mean, let's face it, you ain't Bill Clinton or Lyndon Johnson. Now, I want to wind this up with a couple of thoughts. First and foremost, I'm not going to be lectured by any Republican on the subject of the economy. I think you've proved that you have no interest in even talking about balancing a budget unless it's election time. And second, I don't want to hear about Democratic spending. In the last 10 years, you Republicans gave us two wars, Medicare Part D, and two rounds of tax cuts. Not one dime of it was ever paid for. That is not a guess or an opinion. That is fact. And now, as we see, more of the same. I have no doubt that this tax deal might prime the economy at least for a time, but we're delaying the inevitable, folks. We are kicking the can down the road. Someday our debtors, like the Chinese, for instance, are going to want something. Then what? 35 cents of every dollar in our trade deficit goes to them alone. We can't keep that up. Finally, it all really comes home to Georgia. We have to balance a budget. Here, it's the law. How? No more money from the feds is coming. The state Republican master's already cut to the bone here in Georgia and used up all of the savings, by the way, that Democrats had accrued when they were in power. Who will be to blame when we default or lose our bond rating? Who will be to blame as our infrastructure crumbles? Who will be to blame when we are broke with nowhere else to go? Well, not the Democrats, not here. We don't run anything here anymore. So I imagine instead the talking tenor will change. Suddenly, David, everything is wonderful in Georgia.
Well, Tim, you pointed out that the TV producers are going to get a tax break. What about radio show producers?
No, we've already established, David, for you to get a tax break, you've got to build a windmill, okay?
Well, you know,
Catherine's going to the windmill, you're going to the racehorse, and I'll start filming this thing, and we can get the TV producer break.
When I was driving into Metro Airport tonight, there's a windmill right outside. The airport.
Yeah, I don't know. There is wind power, and I'm not sure if that's for that or something else. But obviously the racehorsing break, and I mean, we've talked about racehorsing as an issue to grow an economy, but actually owning a racehorse, I don't know that entirely, if anybody can really justify that being a tax break.
How about making rum in Puerto Rico? There's a timely one.
Yeah. What about somebody making moonshine out in the sticks of one of the Continental 48? I don't know. That's kind of a different one there, Tim. Well, yeah, but in that tax deal, I mean, you know, we haven't really talked about it since it's been a national issue, but it is just a mess, and I think a lot of Democrats certainly see it that way. And hopefully, the majority of it's a two-year deal, and we can kill it after 2012. Should have killed it already.
But you
speaking
know,
of 2012, this is a good segue into this because we can talk about these and still leave plenty of time for the census. Rick Perry, who we thought for a while was going to be one of the many that tried to run for the Republican nomination, he said that he is not going to be a candidate for 2012. And, in fact, he said a definite no, brother. I don't know if he's channeling Hulk Hogan or the fellow off of Lost, but it's a definite no. Catherine, do you think this is still a definite no? Well, Tim, what about you?
For some reason, I believe this guy. I don't think 2012 would be a good year for him to run anyway. I think there's going to be a crowded field with some much bigger names than the Republicans seem to go for the big names. His appeal is largely regional. Not sure how succession talk would, play up north or something. when he said this to Fox News, I believe him. Don't you?
Yes, I'm surprised he didn't say, hey, how about 2020? I'll be in my, how many terms of governor is from Texas? It's the guy that'll never go away. And the source, I mean, he did it on the Republican channel, if you will. It was a Fox News interview.
Yep.
Some website it was linked to called GOP 12. Pretty interesting names. Apparently this guy's covering the GOP nomination, if you will, on this blog, and I'm sure I won't find it frequent reading, but it was linked off of one of the blogs I read, like Political Wire or something. And so it just seemed like an interesting thing to talk about. But Rick Perry, if he doesn't get in, that's a lot of Texas money that now could be freed up for other Republicans. To me, that's the biggest thing out of all this. What do you think? You agree, Tim, about the money?
And, you know, Texas will be a very, very important state during the Republican primary season and looking forward to the general election. So the talk turns from will Rick Perry run to who does Rick Perry support? Now, that is another whole ball of wax right there, David. And I really wonder who this guy will support because, frankly, he obviously has a very large following in the second largest state in the country, which is a pretty red state. And so even more than wondering about if he's going to run, his endorsement is going to be highly sought after. This guy could be a real player without running, couldn't he?
If the Republican nomination goes long, like the Democratic nomination did in 2008, because, I mean, I can't remember for a while Texas being a real factor until this past year, or I'm sorry, this past election with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama going so deep into the cycle. But I still think the money is going to be a big deal because California's kind of like where the Democrats fund their campaigns. Texas is one of the big pools of money for Republicans.
But this next time could be one of those situations where it may be a rather lengthy process because looking at who's lining up to run, it seems like these people are strong in different parts of the country. And it may make all of them hang around for a while. So Texas might indeed play a pivotal role. And then what would a guy like Rick Perry want for his endorsement? Maybe the number two spot on the ticket because from some other stuff we're going to talk about in a minute, I think there's probably an opening there for that maybe was not there before, and maybe he's looking at something like that.
Yes, possibly. I know another factor would be then if, the Bush family, and I'm assuming, Big and Little George would endorse the same candidate, would Rick Perry, want to do the same endorsement, or would he go against them? And then who would win out of that? I mean, who's more popular among Texas Republicans? George W. Bush or Rick Perry, that would be interesting if they endorsed different candidates and the race came down to Texas. So long way off before we get into this, but since it came up this week, I felt we should discuss it. And Tim, you're alluding to the next topic. You're doing a good job of setting me up tonight. Haley Barbour, he kind of made the news a little bit this week. I saw a cartoon from Mike Lukovich in the AJC that had Haley Barbour singing I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. Apparently had nothing to do with this. Reminiscing for Bing Crosby. And so I really had not heard about the story. I guess I was just too busy with Christmas. I then saw on Blue Arkansas, as I was researching for the Jerry Rapan story that I had heard about, I did finally hear about what old Haley did. Tim, set us up.
He unfortunately opened his mouth and said the wrong thing.
during an interview. He said that, you know, in the area down there where he was from, they didn't have a lot of the trouble that some other areas of Mississippi had. They kind of kept the Klan out of there, he said, and he gave all the credit to the citizens' councils. Now, for those of you not old enough, that's what we used to call in the South, in several of these states, the White Citizens Council. And they were business leaders and civic leaders and stuff that banded together in municipalities all over the South to promote, you know, keeping segregation. I mean, they were a racist organization. And there he is bragging on them, and probably he tried to walk it back, but he really stumbled all over himself with this one, didn't he, David? You think it finished him?
Yeah, those Mississippi politicians, they have a real problem with, you know, these kind of subjects, because this is eerily similar to what Trent Lott said a few years ago.
That's what
about Strom Thurmond. Things have been a lot better. Those old things are a lot better kind of statements never lead to anything good for Mississippi politicians. I will tell you this. If I was Haley Barbour, I definitely think this finishes Haley Barbour for vice presidential nominee, because if you're picking a vice presidential nominee, you don't want to overlook a whole bunch of stuff. You know, like, I got to overlook this statement. And so now I still probably think it finishes him on a national level, irregardless, but he probably would be better off going ahead and running for the big job and hoping he can find, you know, because all he's got to do is find enough little teabaggers that probably agree with him to cut, you know, sliver off enough support to gain, you know, some power brokering ability through that. So to me, this ought to be the catalyst to have him run for the big job if he's got to run for something at all. Now, he may say, hey, I've been, you know, head of the GOP. I've been 2 terms as Mississippi governor. That's a pretty full obituary. There's other things in life besides politics. But if he feels he has to run for the big job, he better go for number one, not number two.
Well, you know, in the modern era, besides the presidential candidate out on the stump themselves, who else do they need there with them campaigning right by their side, David? Their wife. Little known fact, Haley Barbour's wife does not care for politics. She does not like the limelight. She's a quiet political wife. That probably wouldn't play too well now, and that's probably one of the prime reasons that Haley Barbour has actually taken himself out of the running to run for president to start with. But he would have been a perfect number two man. He is a man of some ability, even though I don't agree with him on a lot of stuff. He's got a long background of both activism, like when he ran the National Committee, and as an elected official, he's a rock-ribbed conservative, although he just don't go way overboard with it. And he would have been a very attractive number two, you know, on the ticket, on anybody's ticket, and was probably the leading favorite to be just that. That's how important and how damaging this little statement that he made is, because it does create a vacuum at the national level. I mean, there are people who are positioning themselves to be the number two on the ticket, just like there are people positioning themselves to actually run. And this guy is gone.
And certainly so. And I think him with Rick Perry, you know, both of them exiting the race, if you will, this week by different means, that creates more of a vacuum. I mean, then, of course, does that help people like Bobby Jindal? You know, I'm trying to think of some other folks, you know, the Southern governor
type. Let me next one. You might not have read this about Jindal, but a story came out on December 16th. You remember when he got BP to spend $360 million on this sand burn project during the Gulf oil spill? Well, they've done studies on that, and it turns out that it was a colossal waste of both time and money. It didn't do any good at all. And he was making himself out to be the big hero, you know, over this. And now this story comes out, and just lately, his poll numbers have started dropping out there in Louisiana. He may not be the, do I want to say golden boy? Yeah, I guess I can. I don't think he's the golden boy. I think he's had two big chances on the national stage with that speech and with this BP thing to distinguish himself for the voters, and he's bombed both times. So you got to find me another person, David. We're running out of warm bodies here.
That's what I'm saying, and a lot of these governors have just taken over in different states, and some of the ones that are exiting, I just don't see them, you know, Bob Riley, Sonny Perdue, and certainly Mark Sanford as being,
Or what are you saying, perhaps a person who comes up short in the primaries takes the number two slot then?
I don't know. I mean, I think we got to get the number one fleshed out first. But let's go ahead and move to the census numbers, because I definitely think that's on the mind of everybody. That's probably one of the biggest stories of the past week, came out on Tuesday. And different southern states gaining seats. Florida's going to gain two. No real surprise there. Texas is going to gain several. Let me scroll on down.
Four.
Texas is going to gain
four.
The big gainer of all over the country. Georgia's going to gain one, which I think we had thought it was going to be one. There was an outside chance at one point of two. That didn't happen. The biggest news to me was North Carolina gained zero and South Carolina gains one. Where is the growth in South Carolina? I mean, do you know, Tim?
Actually, every state except one, and I want to say it's Michigan. Every state except one gained population from the last census. The thing is, they only apportion them because there's only 435 members of Congress. So you had to have been one of the fastest growing states to pick up, you know, some new seats, and you had to be one of the slowest growing states to actually lose some. Some of the states that grew actually lost congressional members. Which brings up another point that I read about in another story. Because the population of the United States continues to grow a little over 9.5% in the last 10 years, and literally exploded, by the way, in Georgia. My question to you is it time to expand the U.S. House of Representatives?
There's such a big body. You're talking about 435 people, and people talk about, you know, smaller government. I don't know. That seems like a pretty radical thing to do.
Then each member of Congress is going to have to take on more and more and more constituents. When does it get to the point where they can no longer look after their constituency because it's grown too large?
Well, I mean, personally, if I were writing the rules, just me, I'm not a big fan of the compromise, you know, the big compromise of the Constitutional Convention way back. I'd personally say, hey, okay, add 100 members, get rid of the Senate and have a unicameral body like was first proposed. Because I'm big on proportional representation. I believe people need leaders, not land.
Yeah, but see,
and therefore,
the problem
and I know that's never going to happen. But if you added those 100 people and had one body, now I could add 100 members that way. But that's a different deal. But South Carolina, they just gained out of nowhere. I mean, and seemingly, because I just didn't know Columbia, Charleston, Greenville picking up population. Maybe Spartanburg. As rapidly as they did, certainly as rapidly as Charlotte, Raleigh, Greensboro has. And so South Carolina's got, you know, more population. Now, of course, getting into where these districts are going to go, that's a whole other set of shows, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Tim,
Yeah, it is, and we are going to be turning a lot of attention to Georgia on that, because there's still just a lot of talk. Where is the district going to go? I have thought three different things. I thought, first of all, a Northwest Georgia district. Then I thought just north of Atlanta, where a lot of the population growth has been. But then a third thing comes into the mix, and that is, look at where the state Republican leadership is now from.
Yes.
They don't have a congressman in the Gainesville area, because Tom Graves is their congressman, and he's a long way, and they'd like to have their own, right?
Yes, yeah, so they're gonna create a Northwest Georgia district. It's just gonna be Tom Graves, which is gonna mess over different folks like Jeff Mullen. They're gonna create a Northwest Georgia district, and that means they're gonna create more of a Central North district where a lot of the growth is. It's just how far do they eat down to the 7th district? Because if they eat far enough, Rob Woodall is gonna find himself in a swing district real quick.
But wouldn't it be funny if all of this was done, not for this population or that population, but because of where the state Republican leadership calls home? I just find that interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, it's politics, and politics a lot of times about ego. We've got so many topics we hadn't talked about. We just got a few minutes. But the one I really want to talk about is – the Tea Party Nation founder, Judson Phillips, one of the leading Tea Party movement folks, he has a dream, and it's no more Methodist church. Let's get rid of those socialist Methodists. I thought SMUTM stood for Southern Methodist University. Apparently it was Socialist Methodist University. We thought they were paying Eric Dickerson and other players, but they had something else going on. What do you make of this, Jim?
I actually posted this little story on my Facebook page of all things, and I asked a question there that I'd just like to pose to everybody tonight. Do you get to the point where you just wish that some people would simply go away? I mean, a guy like this, he calls himself, you know, a national leader, and he wants people to take him seriously, and then he blurts out something like the Socialist Methodist Church. Good grief, what is wrong with these people, David? How far to the right are they going? I mean, it's one thing 50 years ago when they're screaming about Catholics, you know, running for president and stuff. Now the Protestants are saying you ain't Protestant enough. So the Methodists are,
In short, if you hate America, you have a future in the Methodist Church, he says. That's a quotation, Jim. I tell you what, if we could get this guy a loud enough microphone, we might could actually pick up some voters, because this is the kind of character that is going to push people away from the Republican Party if people think Tea Party and Republican Party are one and the same, which they're quickly becoming.
Let me play devil's advocate for a quick second. Does it frighten you just a little bit that a person like this might have a whole lot of people that would agree with him?
It scares me that people would not see through this, that people are that, gullible, if you will. But I kind of think this guy is going to turn off more people. Like, think if you're a Methodist Tea Party member, or maybe you're kind of one of those people that you said, I don't disagree with the Tea Party on everything, and then you see this nonsense, you might take a second look at the Tea Party in a negative way and come up with the fact that, yeah, you don't really belong. You're a little more mainstream than them.
Yep.
I just think he's, by himself moving so far to the right, he's going to push everybody else to the left.
Yep.
And, you know, that's
I know
what I think
pushed
on this.
Me but that way.
Yeah, I mean, but we're already there, but I think it's going to push more folks. So, Judson Phillips, as a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, keep up the good work, buddy. Make sure you come up with the Baptists, the Presbyterians. You can hit back on the Catholics, Lutherans. Tim, am I missing anybody else he can hit on?
I'm sure he'll come up with some. Don't worry.
Yeah, just hit them all. You know, maybe even the brunch eating crowd on Sunday mornings, whatever it may be. You hit them all, buddy, so that way we can have them as Democrats or at least as independent voters that are going to think at the ballot box, unlike your bunch that stomps people at debates in Kentucky. But, Tim, been a great show. And Catherine, hated that we couldn't get a little more of you this evening, but we understand traveling from Detroit. We're just I just admire the fact that you called in for a few minutes. But for this evening, it's the Kudzu Vine, last show of 2010.
Good night.
Good evening.
We are the